conscious leadership is like being the captain of a ship. Just as a captain is responsible for navigating the vessel towards its destination, a mindful leader is responsible for steering the organization towards its goals while considering the greater good. To be a conscious leader means to be aware of the impact of one's actions, decisions, and behaviors on the people and the planet. It means leading with empathy, compassion, and a sense of purpose. It means embracing diversity and inclusion and creating a culture of transparency and accountability. But why do we need to have conscious conversations? Just as a ship cannot reach the destination without the captain communicating with the crew and making informed decisions based on the conditions and circumstances, an organization cannot thrive without leaders having open and honest conversations with their employees, customers, and stakeholders. Conscious conversations are meaningful because they allow us to understand each other's perspectives, build trust, and collaborate towards a common goal. They enable us to identify the issues that matter most and find ways to address them constructively and meaningfully. In today's world, where social, environmental, and economic challenges are becoming increasingly complex and interconnected, we need conscious leadership and conscious conversations more than ever. We need leaders who are willing to take a stand for what is right, committed to creating positive change, and can inspire and empower others to do the same. So delve into the world of conscious leadership and explore the power of conscious conversations. We'll hear from experts, thought leaders, and change makers making a difference in their organization and communities. We'll learn about the challenges, the strategies, and lessons they have learned along the way. Together, we can create a world where conscious leadership and conversations are the norms, where businesses and organizations are driven by a sense of purpose and a commitment to making a positive impact. So let's sail on this journey of discovery and let's navigate towards a better future for all. Right. Very deep conversation that we're moving into. But before we get started, I think it would be wonderful. I gave you a task before you came in here to write down four things that you would like to introduce yourself as to the audience. But I'm going to change it up a bit. You're not allowed to mention those four things. I want to know who you are beyond those four things.
Hi, my name is Leo. I am the project coordinator for Action Break Silence.
I'm sure that was on your list of four things to do.
And
you're not allowed to mention it.
I'm not allowed to mention that. Okay. Hi, my name is Leo. I am an individual that is trying to figure it out in this world, not only with dealing with a pandemic of gender-based violence, but also just as a young 20-something-year-old that's just going through the highs, the lows, the flows of this lifetime. I'm trying to figure out what it is, what it was, what it could be, what it should be when it comes to my life journey as a human, as a creative. And I'm very grateful. Thank you so much for creating this platform, a safe space where we can have these conversations that absolutely need to be had. And I'm very excited. Nervous, but excited.
No need to be nervous.
I am endlessly curious.
Yes.
Naturally super positive. So this whole topic and conversation today is trying to balance the yin and the yang in the world. I'm an Aries. It's my birthday not too far from now. And I am in a career and a job that I never saw coming, which I really like.
Oh, I love that.
I'm a mother. I'm a mother of two. I'm a facilitator. And I am just trying to figure out in life, and I'm trying to be the change I want to see. Yes.
Beautifully said. Mm. Right, so gender-based violence, I look at what's going on in the world and, you know, the fascist regimes taking over the far left and the far rights of the world. And, you know, you look at what's happening, especially with the far right, and you go, wow, are we moving back into the Handmaid's Tale? And it does raise concerns for me as to where is this going to go? Is all these efforts that we are trying to fight gender-based violence, are we actually going to have success? And this is why I wanted to bring you here as well, not just to learn what you're doing, but also that we can really unpack this problem. Because I suspect that we are going to see an increase
of gender-based violence,
mm-hmm.
especially when the stress starts when AI takes over the jobs mm-hmm. and all of those systemic issues are going to become more prevalent, it will be taken out on women.
Yes.
So let's talk about it. What is happening on the ground?
There are just so many things that are happening on the grounds. And I think it's important to acknowledge not only the statistics that come out every single quarter from South Africa having 5 times the global average as far as femicide is concerned, to I believe it's men are 4 times more likely to commit suicide because of the pressures that they go through. There's so much happening on the grounds. And I think what's important to acknowledge and understand is a lot of what's happening is coming from the drivers and the root causes of gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. And when I say the root causes, I think it's about understanding the unhealthy patriarchal standards that are put on into the world, a system where primary power is put into the hands of a man. And as a result, that leaves women feeling vulnerable. It's also the very unhealthy social norms that are perpetuating in society, in schools that continue the drive of gender-based violence because things are so normalized. It is also just the disparities in economic challenges, where usually the breadwinner, so to speak, is that of a man, and therefore the unequal bounds in a relationship leave so many women vulnerable, right? So often we hear these stories mm-hmm. and you wonder, like, why would you stay? But part of the reason why so many women stay, or part of the reason why so many women are vulnerable to being victims of gender-based violence, is because they do not have the resources. Mm. They don't have the finances to leave and just uproot their family. I'm sure Priti has had so many experiences when dealing with children and their disclosures, and you hear scenarios of that type of family structure. And then, of course, we can't ignore the legal system that is just so distorted and so broken, that doesn't believe women, that doesn't believe when a woman is harmed, that we're not taken seriously. There's also a backlog of resources that make it difficult for victims to come forward, mm. right? So often when a woman speaks up, her experience is more so trivialized. You know what I'm saying? So often she's not believed, as in the situation with Kwekwe, hashtag justice for Kwekwe. So it's important to understand that the happenings of what's happening on the ground is connected to these root causes of gender-based violence. And until we acknowledge those, until there are, you know, just systems and procedures to combat those root causes, it's going to be very difficult to tackle the issues prolonged on the grounds.
Priti, I think the numbers that we see on the stairs, there's a saying that say numbers don't lie. But when we look at the numbers and realizing that there was a survey that was made that say only 7% of the cases, of the gender-based cases, are reported to the police. So when we look at last year between July and August, there has been almost 1,000 women who has been murdered.
Mm.
And not only that, children are also not safe, because in that same period, 315 children were killed. These aren't just numbers. These are sisters. These are mothers. These are children. These are daughters that we lose on a daily basis. And as a person who has lived close to this experience, honestly speaking, I can't wait for change. I can't wait for change. That's why I show up every day making sure that we fight until maybe we will see it through. Because even with the murders, it's not only the murders. In the same month, there has been 10,000 women who has been raped. And some of this rape, half of them involved intimate partners. Mm. And even the schools are not safe, because out of the 10,000, 106 rapes happened in educational institutions. That's why as Action Break Silence, we go to schools, we do these things in school, because future changes start when this young ones start seeing, believing, and hearing this thing. So us really taking our work to the ground and talking to these learners around gender-based violence, there's hope. You know, there's hope. Mm. It is not, I know it's bad. It's bad. And if we just keep pushing and being authentic about this thing and keep working hard, one day. Yeah. But it doesn't matter how much of a change we're making, even if it's just one conversation, one child. We're making a change in one person. Mm. You know, there was once a story that I heard that there was a lot of fishes that came out of the ocean and this little boy throwing them in one by one. And there was a guard who told that boy, why are you even wasting your time? There's so many of them. And the child responded that even if I manage to put two or three, I made a different. I gave them a chance, a surviving chance. So we mustn't really like look at it as a bad way. We just need to keep showing up. It's a very terrible thing, but we just need to keep showing up, especially fighting to get this done. But hopefully one day we will get there. I have hope because I'm on the ground every day. I've seen the trauma that these kids are carrying every day, but also the resilience they have. You know, they have the strength, they bounce back. And when we educate the young ones, I think in my language, there is a saying that I don't know, I think Leo can relate. They mean you can only bend it when you're still young. So if you want to make a change, you should toggle with the young ones, you know, right? That's why Action Break Silence, we are focusing mainly on the young ones. Yes, you're doing other workshops with adults and stuff, but we're focusing mainly with the young ones because this is our future generation. We want them to be better than what we see right now is.
And also for children to witness gender-based violence, because it's a gradual process. It's an emotional process, a physical process. Like there's a lot of elements at play there. And, you know, your personality is shaped before you turn 7 years old. And those things, I mean, they say from an unconscious bias perspective, our lives are on loop because of what happened between 0 to 7 years old. So especially reaching children, as you say, bending them at the right time, right age is so important. Bea, what do you have to add to that?
Look, the stats are horrific. It's 1 in 3. There's four of us sitting on these couches. So that alone is something. I'd say if you're talking about this conversation or trying to bring up this conversation or involved in the workplace or whatever your community might be, just starting with that stats and looking how many people are around or how many women are around when you say that kind of puts it all in perspective. So the stats are horrific and depressing, and they make you angry, and they make you frustrated, and they make you sad. But I too have hope. I think we are so tired of fighting against. It's always like the fight against GBV, the fight against. And for us, and First Woman in particular, what are you fighting for? And it's that vision of a generation free of GBV, the one who has never experienced it. They're reading about it in a history book. They're reading some old article somewhere, not because it's something that they've known or experienced. And that gives me hope and motivation every day.
I think for me, gender-based violence, you know, I had an incident with one of my colleagues, and she didn't come to work. And I was like, why are you not coming to work? What's going on? And didn't hear from her. And, you know, my first reaction, and it was actually I actually did a whole assignment on this incident, a reflective, because I jumped to conclusions that she was just not being responsible and not coming to work. And you know how it goes. And I sit down with her and I'm like really ready for that disciplinary hearing, you know, really upset because for a week just to disappear is quite hardcore, right? And in that moment, I looked down and her whole leg was bruised to the T, like open, like it was. And I was like, what on earth happened to you? And she just burst out crying. And she explained to me what happened with her and her husband. And I've known her husband for years. And, you know, for me, that was such a very difficult thing to comprehend and to deal with and to also be civil. When I do come across him, even today, I feel very difficult. It's very difficult for me. But in the end of the day, I think what this has taught me is our men are broken.
Yeah.
And if we're not going to address that problem as well, and we're not going to have that real conversation about that work and how gender roles are changing, and, you know, what we also need to be aware of is that this is not work that we can do alone. This is a lot of sleeves that needs to be rolled up.
Mm.
What is your point of view, Leo?
I think it's interesting that you say that, because specifically when you said men are broken, I think people need to understand and just be aware of, like, in most cultures, there are expectations that have to be met, right?
Mm.
And these expectations very much contribute to the influence of gender-based violence.
Mm.
For example, according to the South Africa Depression and Anxiety Group, like I said before, men, specifically South African black men, are 4 times more likely to commit suicide than black women.
Sure.
And this article was in relation to finding out that in isiZulu, one of the national languages in South Africa, there is no word for depression.
Hmm.
There's like literally no word for depression or to describe that type of feeling or that type of diagnosis. If anything, there is a concept, a cultural expectation known as the cowboys don't cry.
Mm.
Which is in connection to a real man doesn't express like negative emotions or doesn't cry, doesn't release those types of emotions. So often this gendered stereotyping and this type of pressure that's placed on men where they're not allowed to express healthy forms of anger from a young age, that grows more and more and more. And it's not nurtured. It's not encouraged. It's not, a lot of the times in their upbringing, that no one is gentle with them.
Mm.
And then that explodes into their adulthood. Mm. Right. And then you find them harming. And I'm not trying to excuse the negative behavior in any way, shape or form. But what I am saying is I'm hopefully trying to provide an explanation behind why so often we hear men are broken. It's because it comes from the root causes.
Yeah.
It comes from a very small age. And part of what we do at Action Break Silence, as Priti said, is that when we interact with children, we speak to them for as young as grade 2. Right?
Sure.
From grade 2, you hear stories where children maybe do not have healthy ways of expressing their emotions. Mm. They lash out, they become physical, et cetera, et cetera. And then a lot of the times when you look back, when you look into the family structure, it's because it's the family structure does not encourage them to feel the full range of their emotions. And the full range of their emotions does include healthy anger.
Mm.
And it's about taking the moment and the time to hear what they have to say or to explain. But also, you're speaking to a parent who is so limited in resources.
Yeah.
You're speaking to a parent who's a single parent. You're speaking to a parent who became a parent not having had processed their own trauma. So it's just like this continuous cycle that goes over and over and over and over again. And it does become very daunting. But I feel like for being a project coordinator for Action Break Silence, I take just a lot of appreciation because the charity is aware of all of these pitfalls and these speed bumps, but we're actively trying to do something about it.
I love that. And, you know, the other day on LinkedIn, some of our peers posted something around men feel too.
Mm.
Yeah, that hit me hard. Because isn't that also, as you say, trapped emotions? Hurt people.
Yeah.
Mm. And at the end of the day, that is something to really consider. And I'm really just trying to for the audience, I'm really just trying to paint a picture that we look at perspectives, because we can't look at a problem just from a one lens. We need to look at it from a 360 perspective and the stakeholders that are involved. Priti, to your point, working with children, I think it's so important for me to also understand what emotional baggage have you seen from younger children witnessing their parents going through these tumultuous times. What is the impact on them?
Definitely. Just to talk about a younger children, the testimonies, one of the testimonies that we've had a child that disclosed rape to a certain organization, and her case wasn't taken into action just until it was brought to us. And we took it forward. Now the perpetrator is behind bars. The child got the support they need. Yes. But when you're in the classroom, you need to understand that you are in an environment where kids come from different background. And some lot of them, they come from a background where there is gender-based violence. You see it from their behavior. Mm. These children, when you're in front of them, they misbehave in some sort of way. We don't take it as a misbehavior. We take it as this child is crying out for help. Mm-hmm. That's where we try to speak to the child and try to find out what's happening. Most of the time we find that this child is coming from a background where parents are fighting in front of them. So they see it, they take it to schools, they start fighting with others, they start being bullies. When we're doing self-love, we always emphasize with them that, you know, people who are hurt, hurt others. So when you see someone as a bully, realize that this person, there's something about them. You know, there's something unsettling about them. So there's a lot on the ground that these children are experiencing trauma. They are surviving trauma on a daily basis, and especially in Deep Sloot, if you know Deep Sloot. It's a very high crime rated, you know, location where, you know, there's crime. They see these things every day, and they took them to be part of their life. But with us, we are coming in and we see them trying to challenging dangerous social norms. We see them standing up against each other, uplifting each other. We really see these changes happening with our program as we go through. Some of them find that they don't even want to participate. They don't even want to be part of the program. They just don't want to be at school. They are forced to be there, you know, because of the emotional baggage that they're carrying. But at the end of the day, like I said before, children are the most beautiful creatures, you know. Even if they go through a lot, they have the strength. Mm. I think I can say, like, they are more powerful. They have the strength to bounce back. They bounce back all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. Even in the worst scenario, in the worst case, the child was crying, the other one hit the other one. In just 2 minutes, they are back. You know, they are back, you know, they are energetic. It's their smiles that keeps me going.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, they're smart.
You know, that you can find rays of sunshine and rays of hope in the middle of all of this. I think for me, my question to you is going to be, you've been doing this for many years and you've been involved in this for many years. Was there a particular moment that really stood out for you where you went, I actually can't, I just need a break, I just need a minute, I just need to handle this? Can you take us maybe through your journey?
Yeah, definitely. There've been many of those moments. Ironically, they haven't been the big marching moments. They've actually been when you get a monthly status report with the latest stats. Mm. So to your earlier points around, it takes a village. It really does. It's about, this is such a big challenge. We need collaboration. We need allies. We need male voices. We need a multitude of organizations. We need a multitude of businesses. It is a countrywide project, if I can put it that way. And you sit in those kind of monthly report meetings, and they normally and should be really positive because you're hearing back of the program partners that we've worked with. What have they done this month? How many children have we taught? How many prosecution and kind of restraints have been issued? And those are all great to see that there's impact. But there was one particular, and I mean, it's kind of a status meeting, and it's that balance between when you're getting desensitized to a topic that you have to protect yourself to work on, to make sure that you can get through the actions and the progress and the proposals being put forward. But yeah, there was one particular status meeting going through those stats when I was just like, actually, any number on here is not okay. The fact that you have to have one protection order issued already is a problem. I'm very glad that it's there. I'm very glad so many children have been through the program. I'm so glad when we see one of the particular ones was you have to keep an incident report at schools of was there, you know, some altercation on a playground or whatever it might be. And I remember hearing the first time there was nothing on the incident reports.
Wow.
And that really hits you. Sure. So I'd actually say it's been in those meetings. It's not necessarily in the marches. It's not in the visits. It's not necessarily in these big moments. It's in those micro moments where it either catches you that any of these numbers, one is too many. But on the flip side, one positive story can also really bring you back around.
Yeah, I love that you're saying that. Wow. It's so true. I think also having the awareness that it's happening, but when you have the awareness that you actually see progress.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is the ultimate goal. I think I want to take it back. I think this is very important for the audience as well, is to understand, how do we identify if somebody's going through a challenge as loved ones? Because there was an experiment that was done by a keynote speaker talking about GBV, and she asked the entire crowd to stand up if you know of anybody that's experienced gender-based violence. The whole entire audience stood up.
Yeah.
Everybody knew somebody.
Yeah. Mm.
And that made me realize we don't even know that people are sometimes going through this. Mm-hmm. What is the symptoms that we need to start looking out for to know, and how do we break that conversation?
I think one of the symptoms is that most of them, I've seen them withdrawing from the reality, from the real life. You know, they've started being in their own houses, in their own room. They don't want to, if they were social people, they don't want to socialize anymore. You know, yes, they don't want to speak about things anymore. They just want to be in their own space. This is one of the symptoms that I have seen, and I realized this person is going through some rough patch. Yeah.
Okay.
From my side, being the facilitator for certain workshops, we have the empowerment through self-defense workshop, and we have the undefining masculinity workshop. And I mentioned these two workshops because the empowerment through self-defense workshop takes a feminist approach as we teach individuals, specifically women, about like core values, boundaries, identifying different types of abuse, the power of your intuition, et cetera, et cetera. And then for the undefining masculinity workshop, we talk about gendered stereotypes, the pressure of just living in a patriarchal system, the pressure that it has specifically on boys and men. And we touch on the various social norms that continue to perpetuate and make GBV just so normalized. So as far as symptoms, from what I have seen in my experience, when speaking about certain topics, it has an emotional response from said audience. For example, for the Empowerment Through Self-Defense workshop, one of the topics is being able to identify your boundaries, right? We have our physical boundary, sexual boundary, emotional and financial boundary. When this conversation comes up, there is a shift in behavior somewhere, somehow. It's either there's like a shiver that happens to them, or it's like a ding that happened. There's like a link that's been made in their head, or it's withdrawn. Some participants do withdraw.
Yes.
While others have physically asked to step out of the room because what we're discussing is too much. And the same is true when speaking about the different types of abuse, right? So it's kind of like when we make the link in them being able to understand that the boundaries are the lines that you draw with people in regards to the type of behavior that you're willing to tolerate. Mm. By having those boundaries, physical, emotional, psychological, financial, you're also able to identify when it's being crossed. And when it's a pattern behavior, it happens over and over and over again, you're able to identify which type of abuse it is, because the boundary corresponds with the type of abuse. The same way, for example, you have emotional boundary, you have emotional abuse. The same way you have sexual boundary, you're able to identify sexual abuse, et cetera, et cetera. So in regards to being able to identify the symptoms, for me and what I've seen, it's when we awaken or we help them realize that, no, actually, you do have the right to have a boundary, because a boundary is for your own self-protection. Mm. That's usually when the symptoms come out. And the symptoms come out in the various ways I just listed. Withdrawn, they come out. Some have cried. Some have broken down. Some have, very interestingly enough, some get very quiet. They don't say anything.
Like it's shock almost.
Yeah, like it's shock almost. They become very quiet. They don't respond immediately. Some are in the room, but they're not in the room.
Hmm.
Right? And then another, from what I've seen in my everyday life, just like moving and grooving, being a young person, I've also come to understand that just a level of being promiscuous. Is that the word? Promiscuous? Like there is a subconscious need to kind of take control of the situation that happened to them. Mm. So they'll try to relive it by putting themselves in similar situations just so they can change the story of what happened. This is outside of what I've seen in the charity. Mm. Just from what I've seen in my everyday life speaking to women. There's like this need to control the situation. And sometimes control can also form in the form of like addiction. It can form in the way of just like behavior that's out of the norm, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no specific, like, you need to see this, you need to see this, you need to see this. People respond in various ways. And I think what's so great at Action Break Silence is one of the various principles that we have is empathy. Just having and trying to understand from an empathetic lens, having the ability to try and put yourself in somebody else's shoes to see and try to understand why they're acting this way. Because we don't hurt ourselves because we're crazy or, you know, we're not like, okay. A lot of the times self-harm comes as a result of a harm that was inflicted upon us.
Yeah.
And I wish more people would understand that.
Mm. Wow. I love that you guys are doing workshops.
Yes.
That there's actually like that interaction, rolling up the sleeves and actually having those breakthrough moments. Because through education, Madiba always used to say how you change the world is through education. I'm a firm believer that's what we're all about here in Conscious Leaders is our goal is to achieve 1 billion educational hours by 2030. Uh-huh. But I mean, like to your point, I'm like, I get so excited when I hear that you're having those breakthrough moments and that you can, that people are aware, because I think it was that taboo where nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
The silent generation, my mother and my mother's mother, it was like a thing, like it was not discussed.
Mm.
And having platforms and places where you can actually have a heart to heart and have a real conversation, but also have the guidance and how to deal with it is phenomenal.
Mm.
So well done. So B, I need to understand, how did this journey begin? When did you guys get involved? What was that big aha moment where the brand said, okay, we are standing for First for Women. This is how we're actually going to live out the brand and what we stand for.
Yeah. So, look, everything on First is purpose-driven. It's the reason you get up in the morning. It's the reason staff connect to work for us. It's the reason hopefully many customers choose us because they believe what we believe. So if you look back, First has been around 20 years, which sounds like a long time, but we're still just exiting that teenage phase. We're starting to earn our stripes as we enter adulthood officially. What's that? They give you a key. It's 21.
Yes, 21.
there we are. But really, it was within the first year or two of First Woman starting that the foundation was created. And it was really around looking at, okay, there was a need for insurance and insurance services made for women. If we really are for women in our products, in our services, in the experience, in our app, in all of our touch points, we need to understand what matters most to women. And to this day, the research is unfortunately still exactly the same, that if you ask women what keeps them up at night, what they're stressed about, what is top of mind, the top two is financial pressure and gender-based violence.
Mm-hmm.
So based off that insight, the foundation was born, and it really is every single month, every single one of our customers who pay their premium, a portion of that premium goes towards the foundation. Wow. So by doing the thing you were doing anyway, you were getting car insurance anyway, you have already made such a big difference. So that money every month goes into the foundation, and the foundation works with a range of partners from grassroots level all the way up to prosecution and support to access to content and education. And it's 20 years in. So we have helped over 100,000 women.
Wow.
And our customers have raised over 100 million rand to those causes, which is a really great story to tell.
And do they know that?
I hope they know that. I will continue to tell them that. But we actually use, and 16 days of activism comes around every year. I think we all have mixed emotions around 16
Very
days.
Much so.
It is an amazing opportunity to reconnect and realign around the stats and what we should be fighting for. However, this is a 360 5 day a year thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we do use 16 days of activism as an opportunity to thank our customers as well. That it is a moment to reflect to them, this is the difference that you have made. And really it's that personalized thank you, which we can send every month actually, to say every single month that you've paid your premium, you have made a difference to a woman or child's life.
Yeah. And it's celebrating those milestones. You know, one of the big challenges that I have with the sustainability drive where we're at is we're always hearing the bad things, but we're not hearing the good things that businesses are up to. And in the times that we are living in, it is so important to, it's not boasting when you are driving an impact. It is important to know, because I think if I look at the stage that I'm in my life, my friends and I laugh a lot. I'm moving towards my 50s now. So it's now getting married to myself as a woman, yes, and really like leaning into my womanhood. Mm. And I think for me, my choices that I make in terms of where I buy from has become vitally important. And as I mentioned earlier on with the statistics, I think that we have a responsibility where we put our money to make sure that money stretches far, makes a difference. Shared value is something that I want to see CSI initiatives. That's not a tick box exercise, something that's not just pink washing. Or not just that is pink washing, that is actually taken into account and has a full commitment. So I want to applaud you guys for all of the work over the years. I've gotten to witness some of that. And I just have to say, it's wonderful to hear that we are actually talking about progress here. So I would like for us to go around here and talk about what have you guys been doing? What have you, give us some examples of some amazing stories of what you've been doing on the ground.
Okay. Well, for Action Breaks Silence, right? We like I said before, we're a charity that's trying to create a world free of violence against women and girls. So we try to get to the root cause. And one of the ways we do that is through the Empowerment Through Self-Defense workshop and the Undefining Masculinity workshop. The other thing that we do is also train the train-up program. And that is where we upskill individuals, leaders in the making, in the communities that they are operating in. And we educate them about the programs and the delivery that we do so that they themselves can also deliver these programs. Mm. And I think what's so cool is seeing members of their own community become the thought leaders and learning about how they can assist in the process.
Beautiful.
They teach also the program deliveries that we have, specifically the primary school program to end violence against women and girls, as well as the workshops that I mentioned. And also our flagship program, which is the Empowerment, Empathy, and Active Bystander program. So they actually go into the schools. And I mention this because it's just, I remember when I was a child, when you saw like the big kids pull up to the school, like you felt like it could be me as well. Mm-hmm. You felt like you could be empowered as well. Mm-hmm. So I think what's really cool is that Action Breaks Silence equips trainers and facilitators to operate within their own organization. And that gives a level of just dignity and hope for children who are watching. Like, actually, I can do it as well. And I think it's really amazing to create, they help in facilitating and creating those safe spaces when doing program delivery, right? And the other thing that we're doing is just hearing the feedback that, and Priti will share, just the feedback we've had from children, specifically from grade 2 to grade 7, because we talk about like setting boundaries, we talk about the power of self-love and just being able to identify different types of abuse. And it's really interesting because a lot of the times, unfortunately, these are conversations that are not normalized in the household. These are conversations that are not like they don't happen with the parents, and children spend a lot of time within the school community. Right. So as part of the work that we're doing and just the feel good moments that you have is like, OK, it's not a conversation that happens at home, but at least for the hours that I have with them at the school, we get to normalize and hopefully help them understand that, no, this is important. How you love yourself is important. The way that you protect yourself is important. And the way that you can defend yourself is just as important. And Priti has had so many experiences and testimonials where a child, you know, has come up to them and expressed their own, I guess, reflections from what they've had from the program. Mm. So it's been really interesting in that sense.
Yeah. I've had a lot. I have quite a lot. You know, like when you walk into the room, children sometimes, most of the time, see you as their role model. I've had children come into me, they're saying to me, I didn't know that I had the right to say no.
Yeah.
And that was powerful to me. Mm. I didn't know, you're the only adult I feel like close to. I feel like I can open up and talk to, because my mom is strict, my dad is strict. We've had so many testimonies even from teachers telling us that, you know, there was one particular school that we had in Displute, they used to keep record of bullies, you know, children coming to report that this one hit me. After we came and that teacher came to us and, what are you teaching these children? And we were like, oh my God, we're going to be in trouble. I'm like, ever since you came here, the book is empty. I mean, for the whole month, the book is empty. No one has come to report that this one is bullying me, this one is doing this to me. What are you teaching these kids? And I think one particular testimony that we had that got me moved was when a parent actually came to know what is action break silence really teaching my kid, because my child has shamed me into be a better man, because this child told the father that there is gender equality. Dad, I don't see you helping mom with this. You are always out and mom is doing everything. Why are you not helping mom with the chores and everything? And that parent was like, where did you learn this? Action Break Silence told us that there has to be equality somewhere. As parents, you are both responsible for us as teachers, as our parents, not only mom. And the parents came and be like, I want to see people who are teaching. And he was so happy. He was so happy. He said, my child shamed me into being a better man. And that was outstanding. So on the ground, we take classroom as a healing space, honestly speaking.
Yeah.
We create an environment where Lena feels so much comfortable or safe to open up, you know, to release their emotions, you know, to release whatever that has been bothering them. And seeing them coming forward each and every day after a session to open up, ma'am, thank you for the session. Today's session was amazing. And we made them be very much self-aware, because there are things like we do, like the brick wall, where kids will have to identify when, like, this reminds me.
Ironic.
Yes, the brick wall, because they have to identify their strengths, you know, their talents, their gifts. There's, it is used as a tool to protect yourself and also to recognize your own strength. You know, when somebody very close to you saying some words to you, they stays with you, especially if there's somebody that you really, really trusted. Because in a community that I grew up in, some words like, you're stupid, you know, you're a fool, could be just thrown around like that. So when we're doing brick wall, we're teaching these young ones to recognize their own strength. When a kid said to them, you're stupid, they could say, actually, no, I'm not stupid, because I have a brick wall that I'm posting on my, on my headboard, or on a order wardrobe, on a fridge. Each and every morning I wake up and look at it and say, I'm smart, I'm talented, I'm this. We are just trying to make them be fully aware of themselves and be confident with who they are, and recognize that these are my strengths and these are my talents, you know. So we've had so many positive stories around these children, so many positive stories. I can go on and on and on and on for the whole day if I had to go one by one to say, okay, this one child did this and did that. So there was this one that really touched me, who came and said, I didn't love myself more, but ever since you came and do the self-love, I make sure that I clean myself each and every morning, because I didn't see the importance of loving myself, because I felt like people don't love me. So why love myself if people don't love me?
Sure.
Yes.
Wow. That's powerful. Let me just take a moment for that. That is so beautiful. Sure. You know, and it's something that we as individuals, and I mean, like, it's such a hard thing, even if you don't have a GBV story, building that relationship with yourself, self-love, is such a hard thing. It's a journey. It's a journey.
Made along.
Okay, so for you as a brand, I want to know, What lessons can you share to other businesses so that they can actually transform their businesses to be more focused on shared value?
And I mean, you're always learning. You're always looking and learning along the way. I think it really does start with purpose. It has to be true. It has to be real. It has to be authentic. Mm. It has to matter to you and it has to matter to your customers.
Yeah.
If it doesn't start with a real problem or real insights or real pain points, then you're not going to get it right as the end outcome.
Mm.
You look at the sustainable development goals. Gender equality is obviously one of those. Those are not a tick box or a framework for us. They are a genuine reflection of the efforts and the pieces that have taken place. So I think step one, make sure it's absolutely authentic and linked to your purpose. I think for us as well, my personal belief is brand equals business. So brand is the promise you make and the experience is that promise being kept. For us, it is about putting your money where your mouth is. It's genuine. It's real impact. So yeah, purpose-led, not just a tick box or a diligence exercise. And I think the other thing is it really does take a team, whether that is your team internally, whether that is your team in your community. The work we do in Dipsluit is because it's so close to home. It's close to our offices. It's close to our staff, etc. And ultimately, what does that collaboration look like with multiple partners, even other brands? It can be co-opetition. You can be working with some of your competitors for the greater good. And that genuinely does equal good business. Doing good does equal good business. And I think that's a key message that you can make the right choice as a woman with your spending. You spoke about women's spending power. And we know women are particular with their spending power. We know women generally live longer, but they earn less. So you have to be very particular with what you're going to invest your money in, where you're going to spend your money. And you can make some really great choices. Those choices can genuinely make a difference and reflect your values.
Yeah. So these activities that you have, can you talk to us about that? And we'll share the link below, but perhaps just talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think over the years, we've also part of the learnings has really been around how do you start tackling a cause like GBV. There's a lot that can be done around awareness, which is drawing people's attention to it, talking around the stats. There can be lobbying and government relationships, which has been something that we've done. And then there's the genuine on the ground impact, where you can tell stories of success, improvements, and progress. So really, you can pledge to give help or get help.
Do you have to be a customer to do that?
No, you don't.
Okay.
So ultimately, you donate to the foundation by being a customer. But if you want to pledge help, if you want to get help, you can do that through our site as well. You can also learn about a range of our partners on there and the work being done to date.
With that being said, get your handbags out, please, girls.
Okay.
It's time for the handbag challenge.
That is a large handbag, Leo.
This is mine.
What is happening with that handbag?
This is mine. My whole life is in here.
So before we even get to the handbag, I want to know, what is the thing that you do to fill your cup? What is your go-to to fill your cup?
Girl, sleep. it's so important. Sleeping, and more recently, I'm not good at this, y'all. But like more recently, I'm learning like to be okay with like, if a cry needs to happen, like it's okay to cry it out. You know, when you grow up and you... And I don't fault my elders. I understand they were doing the best that they can. But I'm just saying you're continuously told, like, to be strong and you need to know how to stand up for yourself, especially living in the economic climate of this country. You know, strength was a big thing. And sometimes I misunderstood that to mean, like, no, like, you need to be tough. So as I grow older, I'm learning that sleep is very helpful. It really does help in clearing the mind. But also just, you know, if those emotions come up, just let them come up. Understand them and release when I am ready to release them. So that's some of the things I do to fill myself up.
Love it.
Both of those.
Yes.
And there's a lot of science behind both of those.
Yes.
And a lot of exercise.
Oh, wow.
Everything is energy. Your money is energy, your feelings are energy, your emotions are energy, and that energy got to go somewhere. It's got to be exchanged somewhere else. So for me, it's definitely exercise. Go move whatever you're going through and move it. outward.
Ooh, what kind of exercise do you do? Is it running or is it...
I throw heavy things around.
Oh, yeah. Of course she does.
No, it's been a mix, but currently definitely in the strength gym lift heavy things.
Oh, you've
space.
Got menopause covered when it's coming.
Pretty. I am more of a me time kind of a person. I love spending time alone, you know, in a very, you know, demure place.
I love nature. Like, if I can just go somewhere when I feel like it's enough, it's too much, I just make sure that I go out. And for free, of course, because, you know, I have a rural area. I can just go and just, you know, like, stay there and look at mountains that.
Oh, nice.
That,
beautiful. That nature. Just bring,
get a peace of mind. And, because, I'm a mom of two. You can imagine my world is so...
Yeah, there's a lot happening here. It's happening.
All right. So we are going to do what I'm going to call handbag confessions, right?
Okay.
I need you to grab three items out of your handbag. You're not allowed to look, and your time starts now. Oh, I love.
Three.
Yes, three. Okay, you got three items. All right. Now, I'm not going to start with you. Pretty. I'm going to start with you. What secret does these three items reveal about you?
Oh, this one?
Yes.
Boldness.
Yes. What story can you tell?
I'm bold, you know, like, I'm confident, and it showed through the lipstick, you know, when I'm, you know.
There you go.
I'm not afraid. I'm confident. The lipstick, every time when I put my lipstick, it just, you know, makes me confident and bold. Yeah.
I love that.
And this one says, I like connection, communication. I love connecting to people. That's why I have it in my handbag. Otherwise, it would have been at home. Yeah. And this one is, this one is, what can I, this one reveals that, there's a word for, not connectivity though, it's,
Wi-Fi.
No, it's not Wi-Fi.
Efficient.
Something like that.
You like to
something
be efficient.
Like, that. Like being efficient
organized.
And also organized and also, being able to, you know.
Adapt.
That was the word. Adaptability. Meaning there I can work everywhere we go. Everywhere I go, I can do anything I want because, you know, I have this with me.
Love it.
Love it.
Fun fact that you know. When we put on lipstick, this is why
red.
When I wear a lot of red, because people actually pay attention to your words that you speak when you wear red pout. I learned that from Jenna Clifford.
I'm going to apply that advice.
Listen, when it's board meetings or some serious meetings, you'll see the red pout go on.
There you go. What we've learned from our handbag, and I chose not to take my phone.
Very tiny handbag, I have to tell you.
I'm not naturally a bag person. So if it is, it's normally a small one. Like, the essentials, and off we go. What we have learned is that I'm a very hungry and also hangry human. This is a finished protein bar wrapper from this morning. So it does talk to training, taking care of yourself, and if you're talking about sustainability, the most sustainable thing you can do is actually look after yourself. So I want to be a centenarian. It's a growing trend of people reaching 100, and muscle mass, to your point, is critical for that. So I'm very dangerous hangry, and I want to be a 100-year-old. I have a recently acquired suite of the recommendation of these ladies.
You're welcome.
So I think that talks to word of mouth. Always willing to try something at least once.
Well put, well put.
And then a set of headphones. I try and fill my reality with stuff that builds me up or gives hope or grows you in some way rather than just whatever you happen to receive, whether that's on the radio, et cetera. So that is, I guess, symbolic of putting good vibes in here.
I hope Conscious Leaders Podcast is one of
it
them.
It is absolutely on the playlist.
Good.
Okay, mine. I have sanitizer.
Reminds me of the pandemic.
Yes, literally. Because by the grace of God and the universe and my ancestors, I've never actually gotten COVID-19. And I think it is partly because I'm very hygienic. But I just like to keep this around just to, you know, make sure I'm clean. I also have wipes, but I thought putting that out would be too much. So I have my sanitizer. And also just besides protecting myself, I do believe in just having the respect to protect other people's hygiene. So sanitizer. And then I have my glass case because I wear glasses. All the time, and it's a hard case. I was very specific with this one because I'm also clumsy. So if it falls, I know that my glasses are okay, and I love it. It's bold, it's yellow. It's yellow and bold because I lose things very easily. So I like that I can see it wherever it's at. And then I have a charger because I like to be able to work from anywhere, my laptop charger. And yeah, I just like my devices to be on point, to be all together, and it makes me happy.
Yes, always feeling empowered, right?
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Where's your handbag, Carmen?
Oh, my handbag.
Oh, that's a good question.
It's somewhere.
Still working.
Okay. Let's see.
I must be careful now what I pull out.
Oh.
There's always a lot of pins. Yes. A lot of pins because I believe the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah.
But also, I believe from a creative perspective, to write things rather than to type things, because it actually releases neurons and is actually very good for your brain and for creativity. I really have a thing about pens and pencils. The keys to my journey. Always on the move, on the go. Oh, I attended a table of 12 where a bunch of women where we met, and one of the speakers of that day was the author of this book, Wholehearted, and she actually has a gender-based violence story. And that was, I actually thought I was going to take it out this morning, and I was like, no. Anyway, I joined her her talk about her story of gender-based violence. Must read. It's very poetic. This was a fun conversation. Thank you so much. And I wish you all the success in your journey. And keep us up to date. And yeah, that was really amazing.
Yeah. Already.
Yeah. All right. Yes, it's 21 years. Bye-bye now.